members of the media. We are here to receive a briefing from the South African Human Rights Commission, led by Professor Majola. And unless I'm mistaken, there's a CEO that has been appointed, Advocate Tshipanyane. And I must disclose that at one point he either worked under me or worked with me, I don't remember which verb to use, under me, and he was a brilliant lawyer. I am happy and want to congratulate the Human Rights Commission to have appointed a brilliant lawyer of his caliber. And I have no doubt that he will add much value to the work that the commission is doing. And Professor Majola, I can say that you've made a good choice. So the commission will be in good hands. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much for those wonderful words of introduction, and good morning to you and to the honourable members. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and appear before you today to present the annual report for the 2016-2017 year. I am accompanied, as you have hinted and made that introduction of the CEO. I'm accompanied by the team, and with your permission, like just to briefly introduce them. On my right, immediate right, is the Deputy Chairperson of the Commission, Commissioner Jana, and on her right is the Research Assistant to the Chairperson, Ms. Nimisa Willy. On my left is the CEO, Advocate Tshipanyane, and your right, he is already showing what you've just been describing him for, and we look forward to a very fruitful few years with him at the Commission. We're very excited to have him with us. And then there is Commissioner Gum, and then Commissioner Nissen. Behind me, we have members of the Secretariat, Mr. McAneta, who is responsible for finances as CFO. And then we have got our Chief Operating Officer, Ms. Chantal Kisun. And then we've got our strategist, Mr. Giyose Siyasanga. The annual report refers to the period that precedes this commission, if I may say. The only members of the commission who were part of that report were Commissioner Amir Mia and Commissioner Malaji. So whatever credit for this report should go to the previous commission as well as to them under the leadership of Advocate Lawrence Moshwana and the Secretariat. One of the key responsibilities that the commissioners and I, when we took office, were tasked with when we arrived was to review and approve the 2017-2018 annual performance plan in January, and that was due at the beginning of January together with the budgets and the organizational structure. I am pleased to report that that went quite well. We were also required to review and approve the performance and expenditure for quarter three, even though they hadn't been with the commission at the time, even though we hadn't been with the commission. One of the other urgent activities that we were tasked with was the task of overseeing the achievement of all the outstanding activities of the APP deliverables for 2016-2017. And as the presentation today will show, we were able to oversee the finalization and achievement of these deliverables. I must say that this particular episode, Chairperson, the lesson that we as the commissioners learned from this is that perhaps it is much more beneficial to the new commissioners when there is a handover of activities, so that they get a better direction as to how to go about doing their job. I found that we were thrown in a way in a deep end because we didn't have the benefit of the of the handover. So when this commission leaves, I think that it would help the next commission if the commissioners are appointed in time, so that there is this is not a criticism, it's just one of the lessons that I think we learned from the episode. Another key task performed by the commissioners was the appointment of the CEO, and we're very proud to have Advocate Tipanyana with us. We decided to select strategic focal areas, you know, that each commissioner is responsible for. Some commissioners have just one, others have two, but we try not to have too many focal areas that the commission is dealing with. This is a very important part of the work of the commission, to be able to decide how to deliver the mandate of the commission. We are at the present moment busy with our strategy planning, and we are looking again at the strategy, the focal areas within the strategy. And we have decided already that whereas in the previous discussion that prepared for this current year, we had also allocated commissioners to provinces. We've decided that for the next financial year, it will just be focal areas, but there will be no commissioners that are allocated to provinces. The process of planning for the next year is ongoing, but when we did our focal areas, we then unfortunately had to deal with a new act intervening, which was in the form of the SED Mini matter. We are busy dealing with that matter. We liaise with other organizations, the Office of the Health Ombud. We liaise with Section 27. For example, we work together with the Gauteng provincial government on the matter, and we are going to have a hearing in this matter as recommended by the Minister of Health or as from the 15th of November, and we hope that we will be able to give the report towards the end of the year, but more realistically perhaps at the beginning of the next year. With your permission, Chairperson, may I now ask the CEO and his staff to deliver the Commission's annual report to you and the members. Thank you.
Just to say, the reports were given to us in advance, so we don't want the story behind the story. We really want a pointed presentation on the issues that require the consideration of the committee. And I just say that to guide our enthusiastic CEO. The papers are well prepared. We are happy with them. We just want you to raise the issues that need the consideration of the committee. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you. I'll unfortunately, well, fortunately, I hand over to our CFO, who was actually acting CEO when this report was prepared, and he signed the report in terms of PFMA. So he will give a snapshot, and then I'll only come in where I have to. Thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, CEO. Good morning to the Chair and Honourable Committee members and Commissioners of the Human Rights Commission. The performance information for the period under review is documented as tabled in line with the Commission's strategic objectives, but perhaps to provide some highlights on performance to share with the Committee. It's important for the Commission to note at the outset that this is the fourth consecutive year in which the South African Human Rights Commission received and achieved an unqualified audit opinion. Generally, in terms of the core performance areas, the Commission has been working very actively with litigation matters, wanting to use supports more and assert rights more, and encourage judicial precedent that talk to the Bill of Rights. In this regard, the Commission at a local level, meaning through magistrates' courts in our 9 provincial offices, litigated 60 matters dealing with basic human rights in the year. We also had some high-impact public interest litigation. We've recorded a few of them in summary in the annual report, but broadly these deal with the matter of the emoluments attachment orders, which this the Commission has previously presented to the committee about, involving the attachment of salaries to people who had applied for loans, etc. And then we had some other matters that came through where the Commission was asked to provide support to the court in matters involving, for instance, the Muslim Marriages Act, Muslim marriages in South Africa, and the Commission provided support to the court by detailing what the country's obligations are under international human rights law. In addition, we worked to hold in abeyance what we feel was a possible humanitarian crisis in Mangaung, where 350 farm dwellers faced eviction on the basis of a court order. The Commission intervened and has filed for rescission of that court order, effectively ensuring that residents are not evicted until the process is fully addressed. There are a number of such matters that we've documented in the annual report. The Commission also works at a broader level to look at public interest matters that are complex, where it works to support, one, awareness by encouraging conversations about such matters, but also to be able to draw what the root causes of such matters are. In such instances, the Commission convenes national investigative hearings. For the year under review, we worked with protest action, in particular looking at how protest action that was occurring in Vuani in Limpopo was impacting on the right to education. The Commission issued a number of recommendations to authorities in that matter, and I believe at the Portfolio Committee on Education is meeting today. While this meeting is in progress to discuss this matter, one of the key recommendations that the Commission made was we found in the probe that the intergovernmental relations and response rates were not working well, and that children bore the brunt of this. The Commission recommended that a task team be convened, and in monitoring implementation of our recommendations, we are advised that the Office of the Minister is working to convene such a task team, but is also now working with the Commission to convene a task team that allows us to operationalize some of the recommendations. 2 other national hearings were held. One of them looked at racism and social media, in particular informed by the number of complaints we get around hate speech, racism, and hate speech on social media in particular. That hearing has been completed, and the Commission intends releasing its report before the end of March 2018. In addition, the Commission convened a hearing on socioeconomic challenges facing mining communities. This was a very complex and long hearing with a number of stakeholders making submissions to the Commission. In general, the hearing was convened because the mining regulation framework for the Commission did not appear to be translating into changes in the circumstances of the communities that are affected. That report as well, Chairperson, will be released before the end of this financial year. In terms of the caseload of the Commission has set itself a target of wanting to finalize 85% of the complaints it has received. In this regard, the Commission received a total of 8,498 complaints, and it was able to exceed the target of 85% and was able to finalize 87% of the cases it had received. The top five complaints to the Commission, drawing from the information in all of our provincial offices which receive complaints, where equality right at the top, 705 complaints about equality, and then very disturbingly, the Section 27 rights, the right to health, to access water and sanitation and social security, was the second highest complaint, with some 631 complaints about these matters. And then also concerning where the large numbers of complaints around labor rights and the rights of arrested and detained persons, both these complaints coming in around the 400 mark, and complaints that members of the public were feeling that their rights to just administrative action were not being dealt with. We received about 407 complaints relating to just administrative action. In terms of the work we do in advocacy, education, promotion, the Commission took on board its own assessments and feedback from this committee and determined that it would focus visibility and advocacy campaigns in rural and peri-urban areas across the province. A great deal of work has been done and some successes have been noted. The Commission convened, for instance, 22 outreach activities in various rural communities. Some 484 educational activities reached people through this mechanism, but the more significant number is that at least 51,759 people were reached in support to stakeholders who convene sensitization and advocacy interventions, particularly in rural communities and peri-urban communities. The Commission has also been using social media as a mechanism and a tool to increase rights sensitization, to increase awareness, but also to engage with a generation that is now almost completely technological. In this regard, the Commission posted almost 20,000 social media posts, 5,213 news articles have carried information about the Commission, and we feel that these key metrics are a good indicator of how we can use social media more going forward. Strategically, the Commission has also been of the view that we can't simply be reaching community by community, but it's important for the Commission to be capacitating members of the community to take forward rights awareness as well. In this regard, we've developed a number of materials, including tools to train trainers, so a manual to train members of the community about human rights, and we've embarked on 27 such train the trainer initiatives countrywide. The Commission is also tabling in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, its prior annual report. In general, the Commission wishes to flag for the committee its concerns around low levels of compliance with PIA. Some 254 municipalities continue not to submit their mandatory reporting under Section 32 of PIA to the Commission. This number has not changed significantly in the 17 years that PIA has been in operation, and it is of great concern. We have seen some changes in terms of changes upwards in terms of reporting by national departments, but deeper probes appear to indicate, based on research done by stakeholders such as the Open Democracy Advice Center, the PIA Civil Society Network, that members of the public who are submitting requests for information are being met by a number of challenges, some of them bureaucratic, some of them chilling in the sense that of fee impositions, and some of it attributable to a complete lack of operationalization of PIA or a commitment to provide information both proactively and in terms of formal requests that are submitted in terms of PIA. In terms of our research delivery, the Commission has generated a number of research-based information. The equality report, which takes a look at the key equality areas in the country annually. It's also submitted information to Parliament and to public bodies on legislation that is in draft form. One of the flags for the committee has been the submission of the completion of the International Regional Human Rights Report. This report is intended to flag for Parliament those international instruments that the Human Rights Commission recommends should be adopted or ratified by the South African state. In addition, it highlights for this committee recommendations by the Child Rights Committee at the UN level, the UPR process, and the recommendations from the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, that the South African Human Rights Commission, as a national human rights institution, must be funded and capacitated to be able to deliver on its mandate in terms of these instruments. Those recommendations have come through from at least three United Nations instruments, and our report on civil and political, on international and regional obligations highlights some of these recommendations. In general, the Commission has also released for the or developed for the first time its report on civil and political rights. In this report, the Commission has taken a look at a number of issues that were pressing in the country at the time, including levels of protest action, issues such as the loss of life at Isidimani, and the rights of arrested, detained persons, and police activity. In a nutshell, for the committee members, those were the key outputs. However, the Commission has also conducted a good deal of work around monitoring, monitoring implementation of its own reports, levels of implementation of its own reports, and on the Lindela Repatriation Center. The monitoring activity of the Commission in respect of the Repatriation Center is triggered by a judgment handed down in 2014 requiring that the Commission monitor the Repatriation Center to determine whether the periods of detention are aligned to the Constitution and the law. This activity is engaged on periodically by the Commission, and the Commission records its recommendations to the Department of Home Affairs with a view to supporting reforms in the processes and practices at Lindela, particularly in respect of the rights to health and conditions of detention. We have also followed up on specific reports. These include the report on housing, local governance and service delivery, the report on access to emergency medical services in the Eastern Cape, the report on safety and security in farms, the reports on transformation at public universities, and the report on housing-based evictions in the Free State. And that concludes the presentation on the actual delivery under the research, legal, and advocacy interventions, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. I'll be presenting the overview on the financials in terms of our actual expenditure, as has been audited by the AG. As my colleague has indicated, we achieved the fourth consecutive year. In the second year, we achieved the clean audits. And this we've achieved by strengthening our internal controls and our risk management processes, wherein we've even further moved to make sure that all the issues relating to findings and risks are included into the performance contracts of the staff to ensure that we manage the findings and the risks. And again, this year, Chair, we've been, the AG hasn't raised any findings with regards to 30-day rule, so we made sure that almost every week we effect payments and ensure that we don't have any suppliers whose payments go over the 30-day rule. The issues that were raised by the AG with regards to IT governance have been addressed. We've developed an IT governance framework together with the strategic plan, which we are implementing in the 2017-18 financial year. We've also set up an ICT steering committee, which reports through to our risk committee. We've also put in place cost containment measures and reduced the use of consultants. So it's only in exceptional cases where we will approve the use of consultants. And we've also gotten commissioners to approve our fundraising strategy to supplement our budget subject to our internal processes. And in the next slide, Chair, we're just giving an actual analysis of how our budget is structured. So you will see that 96% of our budget is committed in terms of 67% of that budget went to personnel and 28.7% went to our corporate services costs, where you will see that close to 20 million of our budget goes to office rentals and municipal charges. And only 4% of our budget is allocated to core programmatic work. And this has been the challenge, Chair, as we were presenting at our MTF to National Treasury, to say there has to be a way where we need to balance our budget such that we see how we can dedicate some more money to go towards our core work. And then the next slide just gives an overview over the years of how our audited outcomes have been. We'll then move to the next slide, which talks to the overview of the 2017-18 budget. You see, Chair, that the picture is almost the same, 69%, and 23% goes to our core. And then at least for this year, we've been able to increase it such that, like, 8% or 13.6 million of our budget is allocated to programmatic work, which is better compared to the previous financial year, where only 6% was allocated. The next slide is just also an overview of the movement between our 16-17 and 17-18 budget. And the next slide, Chair, just gives you the year-to-date expenditure. This is as at 31st August. You see that there are some core programmatic units like legal services, research and advocacy. Their spending is below 50%. but I think most of their targets or deliverables are set for quarter three and quarter four. So we should be able to achieve our targets as we have them set there. And then the next slide, Chair, is our MTF request, which we've tabled with National Treasury last month. And then that budget is dedicated to specific core work that we need to be focusing on. You will see 6.5 million is for our detention monitoring and also monitoring the court orders and the OPCAT, as well as our international obligations. And we've also allocated 2.5 million to give effect to the Health Ombuds recommendations with regards to the health crisis. And there's also 3.6 which we've earmarked for older persons and persons with disability with regards to our international obligations as well. And then there's 1.2 million which we want to utilize to optimize our complaints handling system to drive some efficiency there. And then about 2 million has been earmarked to look at our monitoring and evaluation such that we are able to enhance our impact assessment. So, Chair, the last two slides just gives an overview of our performance to date. You'll see most of our targets are scheduled to happen in quarter three and quarter four. That's, Chair, at a high level, the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chairperson?
Chairperson, I think that is our presentation.
Before I open the floor for members, you know, when you deal with a country like South Africa, you can deal with it like you are dealing with a country in Europe. In South Africa, given its history, major focus should fall on human and people's rights. From your presentation, it doesn't appear that people's rights are also or should also be at the center. And there's also no indication that human and people's rights instruments are prioritized. You will remember that as early as 2002, there was a UN conference against racism. But at the moment, I know there is a bill on hate speech which is supposed to come to us, and whether that hate speech deals with everything that must be dealt with under racism. And I know that you have had big conferences on racism, and we don't know what happens to a recommendation on racism. And we also know that other human rights commissions report through you to the UN. There's no reference to that, and reference to what is contained in the reports of other commissions. So I'm not sure if one would be correct to say that it appears that this issue of racism, which was at the heart of the problems of this country, is really enjoying adequate attention from yourselves, because the future of this democracy, in my view, depends on how effectively we are going to deal with the question of racism. And of course, those who know better than me will tell you that the issue of land is also at the heart of our problem. You have made a reference to Rwanda. I know that there are people who lodged land claims in 1998. Even today, those people don't have their matters resolved because no one is there to provide funding for legal advice. This morning, I got a call from a community in Limpopo, which is saying that the Land Commission says it's not responsible for the debts that they incurred, legal fees, debts they incurred from 1998 until today. And the lawyers that acted for them say they cannot proceed unless those debts are paid. So I see you talk about evictions, public interest law. I'm just wondering, could there be any bigger public interest that is above the right of the people to land? Because people who know better than me say that the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, inequality as a result of land disposition. So I'm just wondering whether we are really addressing the core issues that are central to building this nation. I see that there are people also that have land restituted to them, but they can't use that land because there are some individuals who own water rights, and there's no indication that that question of water rights is being addressed by itself. In short, racism, land ownership, water rights, for me, would be the people's rights that we would have to address if we want to build a new South Africa. But if we are already moving into public interest law, which our new CEO has actually dealt with using a network of advice centers, whether we are not even trying to take over the work that advice centers could do as this commission. And also the rights of accused persons. That's something that is adequately dealt with by the Constitution, and I think accused persons are well protected. Now, I see also that you're talking about fundraising. I don't know from whom, for what. We have had challenges before this committee of other Chapter 9 institutions which were saying that they want to fundraise, and we were not very comfortable with that kind of fundraising because we want our government to be independent of other forces in the world which may have other intentions. So, Chairperson, I think we'd want to, if you have not yet addressed these matters, we would want to hear more about decisive actions that should be taken to deal with racism, support for land claimants, the question of water rights, because I think there are many, you know. I just attended a conference in Kigali where advice centers are more advanced in dealing with public interest law, advice center work, and then I want to hope that the South African Human Rights Commission is not going to compete with the advice centers and that their core business, which is of national interest, that you will be dealing with. I see also, lastly, you are already also moving to older persons areas. I think we have a national department of social work, 9 provincial departments, municipalities that should be dealing with these matters. I wonder whether you have found that they are not adequate to deal with those matters. But I must concede that we have a new commission, and that will be coming with its own strategic plan, and hope that the new strategic plan will not just continue where the other commission left off. Honourable members, the floor is open to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and from my side also thank you for the presentation. First of all, congratulations on the umpteenth unqualified audit with no findings. I think we've seen, Chair, in the last week or so that it's, as they say, one thing to get to the top, but it's another thing to stay there. So I think that indeed is good news to see that despite the change in personnel and some instability also in terms of governance personnel, that this achievement has been maintained. So just one question, Chair, in terms of the finances and the AG report, and that relates to the IT governance issues. We've heard today that there's a framework now in place in the ICT steering committee, and unfortunately, and we all know there's virtually a new commission, it must be said that this is also a, like the unqualified audit opinion, a repeat report to this committee. So we've heard the same promises of improvement in the IT governance structure for the last 2 years already. And then every year the AG comes back and say, but it's not been addressed. And at this stage, I think the question must be asked that we need more specifics. We're well aware that in terms of IT governance, I think the real issue at this stage, Chair, is security. Firewalls, off-site backup systems, ultimately enabling the Human Rights Commission not to be at the risk or exposed to cyber attacks and cyber terrorism, which we've seen worldwide now, can really incapacitate institutions. So I think my call is for a more practical details as to how these issues are going to be addressed in the year to come. Then, Chair, in respect of the Life Isidimeni matter, it's good to hear that the public hearing is to be conducted, but yet I think we're all well aware that the Human Rights Commission, I think, took the criticism on the chin at the time that maybe when the pending humanitarian crisis was reported to them at first, they could have done more. But now we sit with a situation that these deaths occurred in June 2016. The first I read of the public hearings to be conducted was in June 2017 in the Civil and Political Rights Report of the Commission. And now we are told that quite probably these hearings are only to be conducted early next year. So the question begs, why the delay, specifically given the fact that the Human Rights Commission was heavily criticized, and rightly so, for not proactively dealing with complaints at the time. Then, Chair, another issue I want to raise is in respect of the so-called response mechanisms of the Human Rights Commission. We've seen in their annual report that they are looking towards an improvement in adequately monitoring responses. And I would argue that that is indeed a serious need at the moment. In the province where I come from, the Free State, the Human Rights Commission in 2014 already found the Kopanang municipality to be in breach of basic human rights in respect of water. But as we sit here 3 years later, this crisis is not resolved. It's continuing. We see that there's been an engagement with the DG in the office of the Premier in the Free State to try and get a more proper response. So the question is, in monitoring responses, when do the Human Rights Commission get to the point, also in respect of government, where they say that engagements and follow-ups is not bearing any fruit? We must now use the other mechanisms the Act gives us and even take a government to court to enforce improvement. Because, as I say, at the risk of repeating myself, this is a crisis 3 years coming and no improvements yet. Then, Chair, we are seeing the information regulated today, but it would be good to hear from the Commission side as to the process of handover, the responsibilities in terms of PIA, from their side, how it is progressing, any hiccups, and when that will be concluded. You've referred, Chair, to the issue of racism and hate speech and hate crimes. We see in the Equality Report that, rightly so, the Commission notes that this remains a vital issue in our society. But on the other hand, we also see that they report that the use of our equality courts has declined drastically, with 286 cases in the previous year. So then the question begs whether what we have in place are utilized to the fullest to address these issues. We know of the few highly publicized cases, whether the Commission can inform us that in the meantime, and we all know that hopefully they act, we act on principle and not to promote these courts, but have the highly publicized cases in our equality courts contributed to a revival in the meantime since the annual report has been released? And lastly, given the fact that we are in the future to deal with a bill which aim to further criminalize acts in relation to racism, juxtaposed to the fact that the equality courts are underutilized, whether the Commission has formed an opinion as to whether the further criminalization is really the route to go. You rightly referred to the fact that they are the guardian of building a human rights culture in our country. And I think the Commission must also advise Parliament in a timely manner as to whether to criminalise is really the right way to go, whether we not then really pushing aside the option of rehabilitation. So it would be good to hear their views specifically in relation to the underutilization and continued growth in the underutilization of the equality courts. And then lastly, Chair, in respect of the Forum for the Institutions Supporting Democracy, we've not been formally as a portfolio committee been informed, but we are aware that in the office of the Speaker, I think to be exact, the office of the Deputy Speaker, a process is unfolding, dealing quite possibly with the so-called ASMAL report in respect of the Chapter 9s. And if the if the information is accurate, one of the things that's been contemplating is to even collapse all of the chapter 9s into one. Whether that's the truth, I don't know. The question I want to raise here to the Human Rights Commission is whether they've been part of a consultative process in this regard. Is the forum actively involved with dealing with this report in a rather belated manner? Is the engagement productive? And if they could advise as to whether they see this ultimately ending in a situation that will benefit our constitutional democracy rather than detract from it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Schwartz.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the report. Again, also from my side, the commendation on the unqualified audit report. And whilst most of the annual report relates to the previous commissioners, there's a lot of very good work that has been done. And so we do pass that on to your predecessors, and we trust that you'll build on the good work that was done in that report. One of the issues that came up during the interviews related to Advocate Malachi and the investigation into the death of hearing disabled students at Leeuwarden-Stad, and I wondered if there was any further action taken there, where three deaf students died in a fire and 53 were injured after they had jumped from a first floor to a ground floor. We understand that there was a fire alarm that went off. These are deaf students. How can you have a fire alarm that obviously they didn't hear? And I'd like to, maybe you can respond in writing on this issue if you don't have the information as to what action can be taken to ensure this doesn't happen, and whether one can look elsewhere at deaf schools if there's a similar fire alarm that is not going to work. That's obviously a matter of great concern to us. The next issue relates to, Chair, we need to assist the Human Rights Commission with the issue of, and whilst the information regulator might take this over, but the prior non-compliance by new municipalities. This is an ongoing issue, Chair, and we might need to discuss this with the Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Local Government. It's disgraceful that 254 of 278 municipalities have failed to submit their prior reports, and this is an ongoing issue every year. So there seems to be totally non-compliance when it comes to PIA, and we will need to raise this and assist in our oversight function. Chairperson, I'd also like to ask the Chairperson, most of the work that you're doing to enforce socioeconomic rights depends on budgets given to government departments, and of course the budget that is given to Chapter 9 institutions, and of course the budget that is given to you. Is it not a concern to you when we hear that our economic growth is at 1%, and when economists say we should be growing at 5%, and this is largely due to state capture in our nation, where we are having tens of billions of rands leaving our country? Is it not an issue that you should also be looking into, because obviously in 2 weeks' time we're going to have the medium-term budget being processed, and we know the significant pressure on National Treasury that will impact you obtaining an increased budget. Is this not something that you should also be looking into, or is it left to the Public Protector and other Chapter 9 institutions? Because this directly impacts on your ability and government's ability to implement socioeconomic rights and to ensure that they are. Then I'd also like to ask you, as far as the litigation is concerned, and you've had some very successful litigation, if you look at the Arthur Stone Village or the Stellenbosch legal aid matters, what guides the decision as to which matter you litigate? What criteria do you use? Thank you, Chair, from my side.
Thank you, Honorable Matthias.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair.
Well, let me welcome the report and accept the Commission's disclaimer that they are much of the work done accounted for by the Commission itself is work done under the previous Commission. Accept that disclaimer. And quickly also, as you did, Chair and other colleagues, welcome Advocate Benyani. Look, Chair, I want to know from the Commission to share with us their jurisdiction. Today, what jurisdiction and extent of it do they have, if any, on incidents and occurrence of human rights violation? The incident of the assault of Lady Gabriella Engels by Miss Mugabe occurred this year, if I'm not mistaken. Does the Commission have jurisdiction over such instances of human rights violation? And if yes, what is it that they have done? Did they issue a statement in condemnation of the assault of the young lady? Or they just looked the other way? Or is it an incident that occurred when the Commission was not aware of such an incident? And if it was aware of it, what is it that they have done? And would like to get evidence of what they have done or what they have said, as they would be explaining their jurisdiction. Secondly, Honourable Chair, the Commission presents to us their financial performance, which of course is impressive, seeing that they have received an unqualified report and nothing has been raised as concerning, except that there is indication that are occurrences of fruitful and wasteful expenditure, and which is concerning. I want to know if under this fruitful and wasteful expenditure, the element of irregular expenditure, has it been hidden under this very fancy concept, wasteful and fruitless? Has these concepts and the practices which have become a common regular occurrence been normalized and regularized by the Commission, as it is the case with many other state institutions, where fruitless, irregular, wasteful, corruption are hidden under these fancy concepts, fruitless and wasteful expenditure? These practices have been normalized and regularized. And Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act is very clear about these practices, which generally in the state and now by the Human Rights Commission have been normalized and regularized. And when the Act is very clear about what measures should be taken, having also defined what irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure is, which the Act defined these practices as expenditures occurred in vain, and anything that occurs in vain constitute maladministration, where the state is unable to accrue benefit and to demonstrate value for money. Anything that amounts to and have been committed in vain must be looked upon with serious condemnation and must be frowned upon, Honorable Chair. I want to know if, from the side of the Commission, has there been any measure or measures taken, reasonable care have been exercised as required by Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act to avoid occurrences of fruitful and wasteful expenditure. Lastly, the Act, and particularly the Treasury Regulation 9.1.4, provides mechanisms through which irregular, fruitful and wasteful expenditure can be addressed through various means and mechanisms, and to ensure that such occurrences do not repeat themselves, or such incidents don't repeat themselves. Now my question is, do they have a recovery plan and measures in place to ensure that these practices are nipped in the bud, and whosoever was involved as a culprit is brought to book? Because there's nothing that pleases us as public representative to give concurrence to condone practice such as this. So is there any recovery plan? And what measures are you taking? Are you going to present, as you will be appearing before this committee in 2018, a list of measures that you have taken and names of people that you have taken for disciplinary action? We want action, because this will be talking exactly and directly to consequence management. And if we've got that system in place on consequence management, we want to see you acting and presenting before us concrete action taken against whosoever implicated in such. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matthias. Honorable Maila.
Thank you, Chairperson. And maybe let me also take this opportunity to welcome the presentation from the Commission. Chairperson, let me also take this opportunity to welcome the fourth consecutive unqualified audit. But maybe just to check, as the Commission, have we reached the highest kind of performance, or is there still room for improvement? And if there is, what undertaking does the Commission make to this committee, so that maybe we reach the highest kind of performance? There is indication that there is reduction on the use of consultants, which is commendable. But I wanted to check if this reduction can be quantified, maybe as compared to to the previous years, either in terms of percentages or in terms of rands and cents. The chairperson of the commission highlighted on something very critical, the issue of handover. And I think this is an issue which the committee must actually be responsible for. Because if we don't make it a point that there is a proper handover, we are putting the commission at the deep end. And I think this is not only with relation to the Human Rights Commission. It also happened with the public protector, where there was no proper handover. And this must not be allowed to continue. With regard to compliance on the Promotion of Access to Information Act by municipalities, the Commission indicates that only 24 municipalities have complied. Now, I wanted to check from the Commission, what recommendations do you make to us as this committee, or maybe to Parliament in general, so that this is not continued. There is a settlement in the Western Cape called Marikana, where I'm told about 18 people died in about 10 days. I know that the work could be the work for the police, but from the side of the commission, I wanted to check if it is not possible that the commission could make an assessment of the kind of life that the people of Marikana are subjected to. Because we might be only looking at these 18 deaths, but there might be a massive human rights abuses taking place in that area. Can you check that area, maybe recommend to government in general as to what needs to happen in such an area, in areas like Marikana? Because what happened here is actually a massacre. Chairperson, that will be all from me from now. Thank you very much.
Honorable Maile, thank you. Honorable Bongo.
I didn't see you, Honorable. So I recognize Honorable Bongo, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. From where I'm sitting, Chair, I see a commission that is really coming together in a very progressive way. And I really should applaud the prof and the commissioners. The report we have given is a very beautiful report. It accounts on what exactly is happening. So I heard Honorable Matthias speaking more on the issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But I heard from the report that it is unqualified and there are no matters that were raised by the Auditor General. So if they were to clarify for me, is that the status, or is the status of what the Honorable Member is raising here? The issue about the life as a domain, Chairperson, I think we're expecting a report, which report is not forthcoming, and this matter it's long overdue. We have a keen interest of wanting to know how far are we in terms of what the minister said was to happen, the systematic issues that we needed to do after the tragedy. And the one matter I want to raise, because I see in terms of the financials, there is no money. And I sympathize with the commission for that state of affairs. But I think we need some innovation, honorable commissioners, particularly on the, I see the rentals. This is a lot of money that we are paying on rentals. Which money could be used effectively to do other issues that the commission needs to do? If you go around the whole country, 9 provinces, there are a lot of government buildings that are lying fallow that can be used for this purpose of rentals. If you renovate them, you will pay much more less. This includes, but not limited to, you having to purchase a building. Because if you purchase a building in terms of the MTEF, in the outer years you can finish paying a building, then we are sure that now we are over and done with issues of rentals, because a lot of money now is charged by the rent. So I think we need innovation around that, because as we're going to be dealing with BRRR, I sympathize that you may need more money, but there's generally no money in the fiscus. All people who are coming to present, all the institutions who are coming to present, they are saying they need additional funding. So we need a much more innovation around the issues that you could look at yourselves as the commission. But I commend the audit generally, and I think we are doing a very good job, and keep up the good job that we are doing. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You know, I do have ears before I come, and I managed to listen carefully to the presentation, which I read earlier. I want to say thank you very much for the work done so far. I don't know, when I'm not very good in English, when I saw clean audit here, maybe my colleagues didn't understand what it means. I agree that it may be fruitless, because I didn't see any fruit outside. However, I think that you have done a very good job. Now, the other thing I want to say, which I'm begging you to have these ears, what made South Africa the difference between what was South Africa before what is called democracy and what is now said to be democracy is the way people treated each other. And the most vulnerable people on the receiving end are the people in the farms who don't have any right to live, basic right to live. It may be said they are workers, but in the true sense there's no difference between them and slaves.
I wanted to know how far, what is your plan as far as to try and see what they are doing? How are they living? Because if they complain, then they have to leave the farm. If they don't complain, then they have to suffer in silence. What is your role? Secondly, the other people that are in, not really in a similar situation, but those that happen to be in the correctional services also, they have no say. They complain and you go away, they suffer as a result of that. What is your role? How far, what is your working relation, cooperation with other Chapter 9 institutions? Is there no duplication? Have you met and decided that so-and-so must take this chunk? How much in your cases is from your own initiative versus the complaints that are put? Do you take initiative to plan or do you just react? Now there is a demand, it's in the papers. I must run to go and check and get a report because Honorable Bongo wants it. There is marijuana. I must run because a lot of people have been sought. How much in your budget of time as well as money do you divide yourself? I'm just pointing these two main ones who are in a very precarious situation, I think. And thirdly, what is your working relationship with CHICS and other organizations that are working in those areas? And lastly, what assistance, if any, do you want us to intervene? You have to handle the money now. Is it enough? How much short? Lastly, on your question of how many people know you who don't read papers? What languages are you using among the people? To what ordinary people know you? Others, they know public protectors have just been in the papers. Those who don't read papers, how much do they know you? And I'd like you to let me know your plans, how to get to the ordinary people. Not sophisticated, those that are not educated, and those that are in a very serious and precarious situation. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Chapo,
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, colleagues, and the Human Rights Commission, media. Thanks so much for the presentation. And my comments, the first one is around declaration of interest. In the previous year, 15-16, commissioners, your predecessors did not disclose, sign the register, an annual declaration of interest register, as they allege that there was no framework or policy in place. However, the Human Rights Commission Act states clearly that in the interest of transparency and accountability, there should be disclosure of financial interest. So what I would like to know that is that is there implementation now of the framework or policy? Is it in place? And had the newly appointed commissioners, being yourself, disclosed their financial interest, your financial interest in that regard? And then, Chairperson, on the another issue, a very topical issue, one of my colleagues have touched on it, eviction of farm workers, farm dwellers, by farm owners, especially around Waterberg area in Limpopo, Mogopo, Modimolle, le Phalale. May the Commission kindly take that into consideration. That is very, very critical. And in your presentation, you made mention of outreach programs to rural areas. So what I would like to know is that, you know, the chairperson made mention of the issue, the approach in this regard. In rural areas, people view their culture very, very seriously. And I've never heard you during this past month in September making something, commenting on the Heritage Month, subject to correction. So may you comment on that. Mind you, culture, tradition, and religious linguistics is also part of the very important in terms of, this is Section 30 and 31 of the Constitution. Yes. And then elder persons. I'm happy the chairperson in presentation or the CEO make mention of the international obligation reporting in terms of older persons. You know, during paydays, when older persons and other vulnerable groups are to receive their social grants, there are very, very serious anomalies which are taking place there. Illegal deductions, airtime, so-called airtime and electricity, especially in rural areas. And then at the same pay points, there are a lot of funeral people from funeral parlors who made the older persons to pay. You'll find that older person will pay here, go to a second one, pay, go to the fourth one, up to five. So I'm wondering, that I've seen personally, chairperson, around Luwa home. So you ask yourself, I even took an initiative of going to those people, but why? Why are you doing this? And they are not even given receipts. It is written, they are writing in a notebook. So, you know, I don't know really why are these things happening to our elder persons? Government is taking all the initiative to try to alleviate poverty, but what is obtaining really? It's really challenging. So I humbly appeal to you to also look into that. Another thing, the issue of service delivery in rural areas and informal settlements. I'm here in Cape Town, at Bela, just near the airport. Every time when I come to work here in Parliament, I pass an informal settlement just behind the airport. I don't know his name, just behind.
Fried.
Those people are still using baguette system. And there is another one along Arterial Road. It's called Malawi. Malawi, on the left-hand side when you go to yes. It's called Malawi. Also, living conditions there, very, very bad. I normally go there disguises if I'm going to buy Archer. So what I find there really is pathetic. And again, the I don't know whether you have the capacity or power in terms of your mandate, constitutional mandate or enabling legislation mandate to mediate where possible. Because here in Western Cape there are very, very serious challenges. The Khoisan here in this province are not recognized as such. South Africa is made up of 9 provinces. All the traditional leadership or indigenous leadership is recognized. As well as in Gauteng, we have Khoshi Kekaba and Khoshi Nkosi Mahlangu Sokhulumi. Then here, we have a lot. There is a lot of Khoisan traditional and other traditional leadership, but they are not recognized. They've been knocking on the premier's doors every year. There's no recognition. So that's why my humble submission is that can you just as a commission interview, because this is a right. It's a constitutional right. It's their best right. But that is being denied by the Western Cape government. They will come here now and then we try to discuss it, but nothing is forthcoming. And again, on the issue of awareness, service delivery protest, especially what the recent one three years ago, in most provinces, that has got a negative impact on development and service delivery in general, because a protester will find that they demand water, but they burn a library and what. And that in itself affects a lot of people. So your awareness should be very, 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 very much intensified. But I've got a serious concern because you spend 4% of the budget on the core, on your core mandate, only 4%, and more than 67% on compensation of employees, on personnel. That is a cause for concern. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to welcome the presentation of the South African Rights Commission and to welcome the CEO, Tshidiso Advocate Tshidiso Tipanyan, a veteran of the South African Rights Commission. We hope that there will be lots of movement with you resuscitating all that needs to be resuscitated at the South African Rights Commission with this broad mandate that you've got as custodians of constitutional democracy in South Africa. And also just to welcome the unqualified audit. You can do better. We're looking forward to a clean audit in the future. I've seen in terms of the performance audit, you've indicated that it declined. I'm looking at you, I'm not sure who was presenting. And you had to do away with some of the indicators, and I don't quite get it as to how you can do away with indicators. Do you mean that the outcomes are no longer necessary? How do you just drop the indicators? If you can just clarify us on that. We welcome the report that you've managed to complete in terms of compliance and obligations, international, regional, and sub-regional reports. In terms of your participation in the Forum for Chapter 9 institution, I think what's important, and it has been mentioned earlier, in terms of the Kada Asmal report, is to look at viability of continuing with that report. Is it not outdated? Because that report, I think, was published around 2005, 2006. It was dealt with by third, fourth, now fifth parliament, which is almost at the end. I think the process is going to get, if we're not careful, to the sixth parliament. Aren't you evolving like anything else in society as Chapter 9 institutions? And I think maybe new information need to be brought to the table for us to be in the position to assess whether there is need for collapse or no need for collapse, because quite clearly there has never been any situation that has actually come to that conclusion that there should be collapse of Chapter 9 institutions. If you can just give a comment on that, and if maybe there's no comment today, it's a matter that needs to be raised in the Forum for Chapter 9 institutions. I think also there is a need, if you look at what's happening today in South Africa, you realize that there is a need for a follow-up to the racism conference. A number of issues were left hanging through that, out of that UN racism conference, including apology by the West for all atrocities that our people have suffered over the years. And those atrocities are also responsible for why today we still have predominantly black people being so poor. If you look at the economy of the country, you'd realize that the black people are poor, and there doesn't seem any form of an answer as to how they can be pulled out of poverty. This is the kind of liberation that we have given them. It's a legacy. And what do we do about it to try and deal with this skew economic advancement? Because it doesn't help to actually continue to talk about liberation in a country that is so unequal. But the point I was making was, aren't we actually making a follow-up to the racism conference? Because these matters were engaged on at some stage, and then there has been a period of lull. Shouldn't we go back to that? I mean, when you look at also in terms of the attitudes of South Africans, what's actually coming out now, if you look at the Dove advert, you realize it's like we are moving backwards instead of progressing as a society. Are you conscious of things like this as the South African Rights Commission? Do you also monitor the kind of advertisements generally? And I guess it's your responsibility, working with the Advertising Standards Authority, so that you don't have adverts that perpetuates racism, adverts that divides our people, adverts that are not actually helping us to realize the dream of South Africans to have a united kind of a nation. Mention has been made about how maybe you could actually try to have maximum benefit out of the allocation that appears not to be enough. And of course, we do realize that you spent a lot on personnel. But at the same time, I think your allocation needs to actually also be looked at as to how we can actually manage to improve it. And issues of lease, we spoke about them in the past, to say that the leases are very expensive. And most of the money is actually getting to leases. And maybe if you look at also the possibility of using things, of using state buildings, it might actually assist to actually reduce on the spending in that regard. In terms of realization of human rights and awareness of human rights, you know, in South Africa we talk about freedom of speech. It's a personal opinion now that I'm giving. But I find freedom of speech in South Africa half the time bordering on provocation also. Do you concern yourself about it as the South African Human Rights Commission? Because I guess it's part of your mandate to sensitize South Africans about these rights that we have. And that actually also tells us about accountability, also that could sometimes border on harassment. I'm making you to account, but I'm harassing you. And also, we are in a society of people who have been sensitized about their rights, but do they understand their responsibilities? It's an area now that we need to start venturing on, so that we don't have situations where you find that the public destroys its own property. People ban buses, but tomorrow morning they're going to work. There's no bus. They ban a clinic, tomorrow morning somebody's got to get a baby and they've got to travel kilometers to another clinic. Sometimes the children are born on the way, which actually poses danger to the mother and the baby. And maybe these are unintended consequences of what we are actually doing, to the extent that we actually end up with a situation that gives us this kind of anarchy that we sometimes have around us. How often do you vet your senior managers is what I would actually also want to ask. Because vetting is very important. And we will actually emphasize vetting because of the fact that we are grappling with issues of corruption in government departments, in state institutions. And I think vetting is what can actually help us a great deal so that we know who are these people who are actually leading in the government department, in the state institutions, and as to whether they, whatever they are doing is actually correct. You are having the United Nations, the chair, I don't know what you call the chair, human rights chair. You have what is allocated to you as the South African Human Rights Commission. Previously we have said that it should rotate among Chapter 9 institutions, yes, because others don't get an opportunity of participating at that level. Can you just brief us on it as to how you actually engage on this in the forum for Chapter 9 institutions? We welcome your reduction of use of consultants. It's actually helping to limit funding that actually we are really running short of in terms of your operations. Do you still do your socio-economic report? And how does it talk to the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequalities? Because it shouldn't just be a report. It must be a report that assesses socio-economic rights in South Africa and access to socio-economic rights, and how that articulates with the current situation in South Africa, the challenges, the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequalities. And maybe also making recommendations. I was trying to actually look at the recommendations in your report. I don't seem to see any, because half the time what you hear is that people are saying, we do recommendations and the report comes to Parliament and nothing happens. And maybe also, should there be any recommendations, it's very important also for follow-ups to be made. Because, you know, sometimes when you do reports and they come to us and they've got recommendations and we have processes, we find that there could be a way of finding that processes overtake each other. But the point I was making is, in terms of socio-economic rights report, if you're still doing it, how does it actually then, therefore, respond to this situation that's a challenge for South Africa of unemployment, poverty, unemployment, and inequalities? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, Our concern about the past commission was that the center was not holding. And therefore, in evaluating your commission, we would be concerned about organizational integrity and cohesion. We have heard that there's deployment to provinces. What impact is that having to organizational integrity and cohesion? Because during the interviews, we repeatedly called for collective responsibility, especially in the light of ECD main matter, where it was quite clear that the chairperson would say that was the responsibility of so-and-so, and the other commissioners would say that was not our responsibility. And it was quite clear that there was no organization to talk of. It was individuals belonging to one organization, but not acting as one. So one would also want to know whether this new commission, because that does not come out of the report, whether this new commission is addressing the concerns that we have, that there has to be organizational cohesion, there has to be collective responsibility, and that the commission should act as one, mindful of the fact that they are focal points and deployment to provinces. But also some of the questions that have been raised about the Khoisan, the water rights, takes us back to the question that we have to deal with human and people's rights, because there's this over-emphasis of human rights, which is, there's nothing wrong with it, but we must know that we're dealing with Africa, where people as people, not just as individuals, were deprived of their rights. So we cannot deal with the African situations as if that, as if we're all equal, all we need are equal individual or human rights. There are communities that have collective rights that must be attended to. For instance, those of us who like tourism, we like coming to Cape Town. We say we want to go to the Table Mountain. But the Khoisan people here have a name for the Table Mountain, which has cultural and spiritual significance. Why does anyone not even raise the fact that we must change the name of the Table Mountain to reflect the cultural and spiritual meaning of the Khoisan people, who are the rightful owners of this area? So I just want to emphasize that we can't have a South African Human Rights Commission which is not mindful of the fact that we have human and people's rights, and that everybody emphasizes human, which are individual rights, at the expense of people's rights or community rights, if you want me to use another term. If you can address that matter, and also the cohesion, whether you are acting as one or as individuals in this commission.
Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We will try to attend to the questions. First of all, I'd like just to thank the honorable members for very good questions. We have taken copious notes of the questions. And the reason why we've done so is because, as I said in my address, we are also busy with planning. And some of those questions would need to get into the basket that we need to take back to the planning that we've already started, which is continuing on Friday next week and later in the month until the end of the financial year. I'd like to say thank you very much. I recall that when we were here, the issue of the settlement of commissioners in provinces was discussed, and we were to answer certain questions. And perhaps I should start with that question because it is coming up for the second time. First of all, Chairperson, the lesson learned from the previous commission, the commissioners took that very seriously, and they actually came to a resolution that we are going to work very hard towards a single commission that is moving in tandem and working in the same direction. There are challenges, I must say, but after being here on the 30th of March this year, we have gone back and we have been monitoring our earlier decision, which was taken in the first week of our arrival at the commission. And we eventually, by the 30th of June, came to the conclusion that perhaps that decision should not be pursued, and we decided to resign it, the effect thereof being that all commissioners should be based together so that there is easier sharing of ideas, easier consultation, easier advice, so that information can be at the fingertips on a regular basis. We also, I must say that we looked at the practicability in terms of convenience and cost, and those two also informed the decision to resign the earlier decision. So we are working towards a single commission where we hope that the center will be holding. So we are in the process now, in terms of which all the commissioners who are outside the head office are planning to come back to head office. I hope that the next time we report, we will deal with that. May I then move to the issue of the chair, the UN chair, because that question also is coming up for the second time. Now, in order for an organization to be part of the global alliance of national human rights...
Before you move to the next, do you have any time frames when that centralization is going to take place?
Chairperson, I would like to beg your indulgence to be given time to deal with these issues in our planning so that, commissioners together can come up, with the time frames, that we can then forward to you. But I will note that issue. Thank you. The South African Human Rights Commission became the chair because of the fact that it is a national human rights commission. These institutions are accredited on the basis of the Paris principles, and those Paris principles apply to national human rights institutions. So an organization that is not, for example, the public protector, is not a national human rights institution or the AG or the Commission for Gender Equality is not a fully fledged National Human Rights Commission, cannot qualify to be a member of this global alliance, and therefore cannot be in a position to play a part directly. However, as the Commission, we are open to presenting whatever issues that they would like us to present to the Global Alliance and also to the network of African national human rights institutions. And this leads me to the question that was asked earlier about what cooperation exists among the Chapter 9 institutions, and whether we have taken any steps to create such cooperation. I would like to say, yes, we have already taken steps to meet some of them. We have conducted, for example, the Commission for Gender Equality, and we have discussed at length and proposed ways in which the two organizations can cooperate. Unfortunately, they did not have all their commissioners, but more importantly, they didn't have a chairperson, because the acting chairperson, Togo Mpumlwana, stepped down. But we have been continuing the discussion with them. We are right now planning to have a joint dialogue on violence against women and children that is in the early stage of planning. And we're looking at also, during the meeting that we had earlier, we looked at how we could work together on cases that, where there is overlap, and how we could cooperate jointly in doing some of the work. We've had discussions with the office, with the public protector, because in investigating some of the violations, we have come across situations where we feel that some form of corruption has taken place, or some form of redress is needed, which could be addressed much better using the powers of the public protector. We are at a stage where we have formed a subcommittee that is going to draw a memorandum of cooperation that would enable us to use the powers of the public protector where it is necessary and possible, and also they can use our powers where it is necessary. And that subcommittee is then going to look at the terms of reference, and eventually would have a memorandum of understanding. I have taken steps to try and see the Auditor General, because I think that in part of the work that we do sometimes needs assistance from him. We have unfortunately not been able to talk. I've seen the IEC, and I've indicated that our work and their work overlaps somewhere, the right to vote, political rights, and so on, and we agreed that we were going to talk about that. I don't know where to start, but may I go to the beginning, and my colleagues will deal with some of the questions. The issue of Esid Dimeni, we have done a lot of work in preparation for the hearing, for the investigation that was recommended by the Minister of Health. The hearing is going to be next month, not next year. It's just the report writing that we foresee is going to take a long time, because some of the submissions that we've got are quite voluminous, and we do not have the staff or all the full capacity to analyze them on a, within a very short period of time and finalize them. We had planned to have the hearing early in August, and a week before the hearing started, the external expert on the panel had to withdraw, and which meant therefore that we couldn't proceed with the hearing. And we then it necessitated that we postpone the hearing to a later date. One of the matters that perhaps I should raise is that the SETIMIN matter came to us by way of a recommendation of the health ombud and eventually the recommendation of the minister after we had confirmed the budget and got it approved and submitted to Treasury. In that budget, we hadn't made any provision for the SETIMIN matter, and it therefore has the challenge that we have to accommodate it within the existing resources, and sometimes things are not moving as quickly as they're supposed to move because we have to move resources from here to the SETIMIN matter. But we are doing the best that we can. We think that it's a matter that is quite involved because healthcare takes place in the provinces. It doesn't take place at the national level. And therefore, we've got also to get information from all 9 provinces, and some of this information comes in very big volumes and so on. So that is the that is the answer to that question. With regard to the response mechanism, that Honorable Horn spoke about, yes, I'm aware of the governing municipality violation, and I've actually been to the Free State myself. I asked the speaker there that I be invited to speak to her and to her colleagues, the speakers of the municipalities, and I raised amongst others this matter and asked for their support. When a state organ or an entity violates human rights, or when we receive a report that the right is violated, of course we first try to engage. The Act says that we can negotiate, we can use the non-adversarial methods to deal with the problem. Because of the very acute financial situation that we are in as a Commission, we cannot afford to go to the more expensive coercive methods. So we start there, and then when we realize that we do not have movement, we then go to litigation. But litigation is very expensive. If we do not have the necessary resources to engage litigation, we often get stymied. We have a few matters right away that we would have liked to take to litigation, but because we do not have money, we have not yet gone to litigation. So we use the other provisions that we have, which means writing, which means subpoenaing people and so on. But it would be ideal if we had the money to litigate, and litigation is expensive. The CEO and myself have been to the Johannesburg Bar. We've spoken to some of the groups there to ask whether they can help us by making their expertise available to the Commission to do certain matters. We are at a stage where we are talking about agreeing on a memorandum of understanding so that we can get their assistance. I was at the farewell of the judge president of the Northern Cape on Saturday, and I saw other groups, and again we discussed the possibility of getting them to help us with litigation, because we don't have money, so we've got to get other ways of doing it. It concerns us that the commission is then seen as being toothless, because when it actually gets to a point when we must fight as the commission, we are unable to fight, largely because we do not have the resources to fight. With regard to the handover of PAIA, I would ask our COO behind me to attend to that, so she will get to that question. We have engaged quite a number of times with the Department of Justice on the issue of the better utilization of the equality courts. We agree that there is underutilization of the equality courts, and we are trying to push the greater utilization of the equality courts. One of the methods that we need to use, because we don't have enough money, is the equality court review. There is a review mechanism, and we as the commission are involved in that mechanism. We've had a couple of meetings with the Department of Justice. They have the money and so on, and in the meetings that we've had with them, we have tried to deal with this issue of the underutilization of the equality court, but some of the members of that review committee have resigned, or their terms have expired, and so the department is going to replace those and going to do it. On our part, we are trying to encourage our own people to present matters at the equality court, and we have had at least one of our own lawyers, the provincial managers, presenting one case. We are busy now preparing other equality court cases, but I think that we need to push the Department of Justice to publicize these courts, because they have the mandate to do that and the money to do that. We believe that a lot can be dealt with in that regard. Perhaps Chairperson, you would like to say something while I'm just looking at the other questions.
I'm going to give you 15 minutes in all to deal with all the questions, because we should have moved on to another matter at 12.
Chairperson, we can also submit written questions, because written answers.
The question can be in the 15 minutes, and then the rest
you can. Okay, thank you.
Oh, can I? Shall I speak? Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, and very good afternoon to all my colleagues and friends here. I'm just going to make two points. The one is on racism. And we understand that the bill is in the process somewhere, legislation on anti-racism, and we're anxiously awaiting that. But I want to bring to your attention how rife racism is in this country. Just 2 days ago, I saw an advert of Dove soap, where a person was dipped into Dove soap, it was a black person, and came out white. Now, in this day and age, 24 years into our freedom, that is absolutely not acceptable. And I want to ask the Human Rights Commission to make a statement on that soon. The second issue, I made a trip to a place called Kutser Wat. It's somewhere in the West Coast. And I met with the Khoisan people there. And they had invited me to come there. Of course, they had many, many issues. And it was so distressing to see a community where there was no hospital, there was one primary school, no infrastructure, no parks, nothing. I mean, it is absolutely not acceptable. And it is, in fact, just about an hour's drive
from here. And to find so close to Cape Town, you've got an entire community deprived of basic socioeconomic rights. So I just want to place that on record. I think the Khoisan issue and the land issue is extremely vital. And I don't think, as the Khoisan people told me, that they did not believe that South Africa will have achieved its freedom unless the land issue is dealt with and dealt with appropriately. And it doesn't come from 1913, from the Lands Act. The land issue is here for hundreds of years. And I want to appeal to everybody that's responsible to address the land issue appropriately once and for all before South Africa can go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to assume that you'll guide us going forward in the absence of the chair.
Two more commissioners will respond before we come in.
Ask a very quick follow-up. I know the time is limited. Because there might not be time, but I'll respect your ruling. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just quickly on the matter of the funds in general, available funds as well as fundraising, you made the very important point. I think that in terms of our legislation, we are indeed allowed specifically to fundraise. But I think the important thing is, as you put it, that we should make sure that it doesn't come from other forces, also international forces, governments and so on, with problematic intentions. And that is why we have developed a very specific fundraising strategy to make sure that when we do fundraise, that it is from reputable sources and that it is checked very carefully as far as that is concerned. But obviously we take note of your concern in that regard. The other point I wanted to make as far as our own available funds and so on is concerned, I think we have, through these months, really learned that the funding that we do receive is not adequate, you know that as well, for purposes of exercising our mandate. And just for interest's sake, also in terms of this committee taking these matters forward, there was a judgment in, I think it was 1999, NNP versus Government of the Republic, pertaining specifically to the funding of Chapter 9 institutions. You would all know about that judgment. And in that judgment, it said quite clearly, first of all, that the budget should actually be located with Parliament. But apart from that particular point, that the Chapter 9 institution should actually be in a position to set their own budget, and that the test in the final analysis would be whether it is reasonably sufficient, the funds that have been provided, is reasonably sufficient for purposes of exercising their mandate. And maybe this committee can also assist us in helping us to apply that particular test, which has already been set quite some years ago by the Constitutional Court in that regard. Then just in terms of the PAHIA non-compliance of municipalities and certain government departments and so on, I think we're in a very unique position. Maybe we should also see to what extent we can work together with the NCOP in this regard. But whilst most government departments are indeed accountable to parliamentary portfolio committees, we are also accountable to portfolio committees. And in that sense, I think the portfolio committees have a very important role in assisting us to hold these entities to account. We also obviously have certain powers in terms of our legislation, and I think the view of the new commission is that when necessary, we should make use of those powers. For example, the power to subpoena. And in terms of the non-compliance of municipalities and so on, there will be a point where we will have to make use of that particular power, but there is also the important role that Parliament can play in assisting us to hold these entities to account. Then just in terms of the money spent on rentals, I think that's been an issue for us as well. And we have inherited, unfortunately, also a situation, for example, where there's a lot of, in our view, wasted space at the head office in Johannesburg, for example. And the idea that we are really promoting in this regard, also with the relevant departments and so on, is that there should be one, and that's a good idea coming from the ASMAR report, that there should be one human rights campus based at the Constitutional Court premises. There is indeed space available for that purposes. And if we, together with this committee, can work towards really establishing that one campus, that will also make possible much greater collaboration between the human rights, between the various Chapter 9 institutions, and make sure that there's not so much duplication and so on taking place in that regard. You might know that in terms of our proposals, we have proposed as a commission that we do agree with a merger, but we understand that that process might, there might be problems in terms of that. But we have proposed that position, but we would obviously abide by the eventual decision in that regard. Let me stop there.
Commissioner, thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. With regard to the Khoisan issue, the Commission undertook an investigative hearing in 2016 and are in the process of finalising its recommendations. But key amongst all of it is the Khoisan traditional bill that is before this Parliament and has been before this Parliament for a long time. And until such time, that bill becomes an Act of Parliament, many of the Khoisan issues will still be debated and discussed. But that bill is before this Parliament, and we hope that by the end of this year, similarly, it will not happen before the end of this year, perhaps early next year or next year, that bill be discussed and acted as an Act of Parliament, because that will give a lot of recognition and other issues that the Khoisan community is demanding to be recognized through that Act of Parliament. Obviously, Chairperson, the different departments that are dealing with the Khoisan issue are at pains in just looking at the different groupings and all the issues, because not all the groupings are united. So they are going through this process of dealing with those committees. With regard even to the name of Table Mountain, there's been discussions with national parks around it, in terms of between the different Khoisan communities and the national parks, in order to look at Table Mountain and to change the name. However, there's also a lot of other issues within this province that still bears the old names, like the Hottentot, or in some places there's still Kafferskale, Kafferskraal, and we have to deal with that in this province and deal with those kind of names that are really against the dignity and bears a brutal history and as a violation of the dignity and rights of our people in the area. With regard to Marikana, obviously, yes, we've been part of the task team. We've been involved in and continue to observe what's happening in Marikana. And, and we are in the process of raising those issues like the lights and the water in Marikana with the city of Cape Town.
CEO?
Chair, in a few minutes. On the issue of the equality and equality courts, my hobby horse would really like to see this committee helping us to get the Department of Justice and the President to bring the Equality Act into full operation, especially the promotional aspect of thereof, since the Act was passed in 2000. We are speaking to them as well, but certainly it affects awareness of this Act and how it's being used by our people, and the low number of people who actually use the quality courts. And as a result, the department is even thinking of shutting down some of the quality courts because there are no cases. I think last year there were only 86 matters before the quality courts in the whole country, and yet we have serious challenges of racism in this country and unfair discrimination. On the issue of PAIA, Chair, we don't even know when we'll be handing over this Act to the information regulator. We had a meeting with them last week, and they also don't know. But what we are very clear is that when we hand over this Act to them, it should really be a healthy child. So one of the decisions we've taken recently is that we'll be writing to all the repeat offenders under the PAIA who are not submitting reports to the Commission. And they'll be given a choice: you submit or you suffer the pain. So we'll actually subpoena them or even take them to court, because otherwise it will be irresponsible to hand over a limping child to the Information Commissioner, who must then start over again. And of course, there are issues around the amendment of the PAIA Act, as we saw last week or a week before, where the court actually ruled that the PAIA Act is unconstitutional in the sense that it does not allow disclosure of private funding of political parties. Of course, it's another process in Parliament. On the issue of Kara Asmal, Chair, we had a meeting with the Speaker, Deputy Speaker, and the Chair of the NCOP and other people. I think you were there. And the talk of setting up a task team to look into all these issues. But, Chair, our position is very simple, that, you know, this Parliament and the people of this country have a duty to ensure that we do have an appropriate and effective mechanism which will promote and protect human rights. Whether it's a human rights commission or merger or whatever, that's not really our concern. Our concern is that there must be an effective vehicle, whatever you call it, to address this issue. So we'll be assisting in those deliberations, including the issue of the task team. The land issue is very important, Chair, and we have actually said that, you know, if we don't address this issue in a proper manner, we'll actually start being irrelevant. People start actually questioning our role as well as a human rights commission. And therefore, it is in this regard, Chair, that we actually thank the input made by members of this committee, because, as the Chair has pointed out, my Chair, we're in the process of coming up with a new strategic plan for next year. And a lot of things which have been raised in this meeting are very important for us to inform and concretize our own issues. On the issue of the budget, Chair, we definitely have to be poor. We have to look at where is the much need of addressing human rights in this commission, in this country. And the commission must speak to that and be relevant to those issues. So we cannot be dealing with fancy issues which really don't address the major needs of our people. Just on that, Chair, yes, the budget is not adequate and we'll need more, but also there's a responsibility on our part to make sure that we make better use of what monies are given to us. And we should also be accountable to Parliament. You know, are we really using the rents given to us in an effective and efficient manner? And we hope there will be more discussion in that regard. Around socioeconomic rights, we're certainly reviving our full monitoring of socioeconomic rights next year in terms of Section 184. We also want to focus a bit more on business as well. On the issue of PFMA, we have had the concerns raised by a member of this committee. Yes, we are also quite mindful of the issues of fruitless, wasteful expenditure. In terms of PFMA, it's on my head. So if there's any fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I will be held responsible personally. So it is my responsibility to ensure that we do that. And we will report to this committee where those incidents occur. And I can assure the honourable member that we will not be hiding those incidences. We have to be accountable. If we cannot be accountable as a commission, how then do we expect our country and everybody else to be accountable?
Thank you for a good maiden speech. I think I'll take only one follow-up because we are well over time. Honourable Sword. We should have ended this session at 12.
Yes, and if you can feel free to respond in writing because there isn't time, but the issue of state capture is still not being addressed, and I would think maybe you would like to respond in writing. Because I hear the colleagues laughing, but it is a very serious issue. It impacts our budget. Deputy Chair, the issue of Bell Pottinger in London, fanning racism in South Africa, directly linked to state capture. These are issues that the Human Rights Commission should be engaging with. It impacts our budget. It impacts everything. It impacts the relations in our nation, socioeconomic rights. If we do not have the budget, an estimated 100 billion rand per year is being lost. We've got multinationals involved in this as well. So, Chair, I feel it's a lengthy answer that might be required, so I'd ask them to respond in writing. It will be interested whether you are able to play any role in looking into this issue. I just wanted that to be raised again. Thank you, Chair.
Leave it at that, and unfortunately, I won't allow any other follow-up because it's 25 past. We have the information regulator that must be here, which means they're only going to have 30 minutes because we don't have time. Thank you very much, and you are well excused.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you please have bilaterals outside? Honorable Mpumulwane, can you have bilaterals outside? We have to move on to the next.
Thank you, dear. Are you the brown handbag?
Brown.
And laptop bag. And that's you. And the pouch. Can you take your yogurt? No, this is all yours. Wait, is that my cable? Yeah. It's the same question. Without fail.
Close there. must actually apologize to the information regulator that there's not much time to take your briefing, because before lunch we have to dispose of another matter relating to the public protector and the SA board for sheriffs. So we will have to end at 10 to 1 so that we dispose of that matter. And we are also mindful of the fact that this will be your maiden speeches. So we don't want to put pressure on you. We just want a briefing in broad outlines. And the rest of the issues will ask you to submit in writing. So can you please address us, and congratulations on your appointment and the appointment for your team.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, and good afternoon. I'm accompanied here by five members of the four members of the regulator. It's myself as the Chair, Sizwe Snail Gamduse is a member part-time, with Tana Tisoria.
Let me just say, with the permission of the members, we'll have to go on until 1:30 because we can't get them to travel this far and give them 10 minutes. We'll break at 1:30 and have a 30-minute lunch break. Yeah, proceed.
Thank you very much for your indulgence, Chairperson. Please welcome to the Snail Gamduse, part-time member, Tana Pistorius, part-time member, Lebogang Strom Nzama, full-time member, responsible for protection of promotion of access to information, and then Colin Whipond, full-time member, responsible for the protection of personal information, and Mamoroke Mpelo is assisting us from the department. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Chairperson and honorable members. We really appreciate it. As you know, we took office on the 1st of December. That's when we appointed, and we held our inaugural meeting on the 2nd of December. And we operate from four offices given to us by the Department of Justice in Pretoria. The regulator for now consists of us, that's us as we see us before you. We now have a corporate identity. You see, that's where we started, because we thought it was important for us to have a corporate identity, and you see we have a logo. The presentation is there, which, because we wanted to save money, we commissioned the Department of Justice and Correctional Services to assist us with that, and we are quite proud of our logo. I'm hoping that it will come up there, which we unveiled on the 14th of February at a first media briefing that we had here in Cape Town. You'll see the explanation of the logo if you want to know what it represents and why certain colors are at the top, others at the bottom. We all have the explanation of the logo. And what we started doing after we were appointed was to just come up with the corporate governance structure of the regulator. And you will see all the committees that we have established and who sits on those committees and the terms of reference for all those committees. And the information appears on our website. And to save time, I will not go through that. And one of the things that we did when we started was really to come up with a strategic plan and an annual performance plan. We did that really to just support good corporate governance practice, because strictly speaking, we're still an entity. under the Department of Justice until we've been fully operationalized. So our budget is within the Department of Justice, and the DG for Justice accounts for our budget. But we thought that we have to get into the habit of starting to do things so that we learn to be compliant. So you will see that we have, and we also adopted, and we also came up with an annual report, even if it was not strictly required. So we have also distributed that. But among the activities that we have been doing, you will see on the next slide, we have been meeting with a number of stakeholders just for the public awareness of the regulator being a new body. And you'll see all the people that we met, the Speaker of the National Assembly, Chairperson of the NCOP, briefing meetings with the Minister of Justice and the Deputy Minister. We've held meetings with the South African Human Rights Commission because, as you know, we're going to take over the function of enforcing PAIA from the South African Human Rights Commission. So we've been holding discussions with them. And also the bodies that we are going to have a very close relationship with, the National Consumer Commission, for instance, on issues of direct marketing through electronic, unsolicited electronic communications. You'll know that the National Consumer Council is in the process of coming up with what they call an opt-out register, so that if a consumer has registered themselves on an opt-out register, they cannot be approached for unsolicited communication through electronic means. But our act provides the opposite. It says that to be approached for unsolicited direct marketing through electronic means, you have to give voluntary consent. Voluntary. So there is a sort of a conflict between their act and our act, and that those are the issues that we've been talking. You'll see all the Banking Association of South Africa, for specific reasons, because banks, telecommunications service providers, and insurance companies, according to the complaints that we receive, are the ones against whom we have quite a number of complaints. So we've met with the Electoral Commission also because they process a lot of personal information, and we have to understand how our act, POPIA, impacts on their act. We met the South African Editors Forum, Civil Society Organization, the South African Law Reform Commission. You'll see all the organizations that we have met, and we'll talk about some of them in fuller detail. We have also been requested to provide training by a few public bodies that we have mentioned in the slide on page 8. And in our short space of existence, we see that there's also some interest in the work that we're doing. And we have been visited by some of our sister organizations from other parts of the world. And we also have attended two conferences, one on the continent and the other one internationally. We're involved in litigation. We were cited as the seventh respondent in the constitutional case of Black Sash Trust versus Minister of Social Development and others. You'd recall, Chairperson, that in that case, the Black Sash had requested the court to declare that the personal information of grant beneficiaries belonged to SASSA, and we thought that that was not the correct interpretation of the act, and we filed an explanatory affidavit to the effect that the court must declare that personal information of grant beneficiaries belong to them and not to SASSA. And we sought a declaratory order to that effect, and we were granted that declaratory order. And since the Constitutional Court case, we have been continuously monitoring the implementation of the aspects of the judgment relating to the processing of personal information of grant beneficiaries by all the parties concerned, in particular CPS. And in this regard, we have held separate meetings with CPS and with the Black Sash Trust, And this past Friday, we were invited by the expert panel, which has been appointed by the Constitutional Court to monitor the implementation of that court decision, to just give them information on what we as the regulator have done to ensure that the court order has been complied with, particularly as it relates to issues that fall within our mandate, which is protection of personal information. We're not yet fully operational, but we have already received 150 complaints relating to unlawful processing of personal information, and on analysis, these complaints relate to direct marketing through unsolicited electronic communications emanating from banking industry. That is why we had a meeting with the Banking Association of South Africa. Insurance companies and telecommunications companies are also the ones from against whom we receive complaints. In terms of Section 112 of the Protection of Personal Information Act, the regulator is supposed to make regulations. We have already drafted the regulations. We published them for comment on the 8th of September. The closing date for comments is the 7th of November. And the regulations, in general terms, deal with the issues that we articulate on page 14 of the slide. We have not made provision for regulations dealing with processing of health information by certain responsible parties, such as insurance companies, medical schemes, and pension funds. The view that we took was that those parties should make submissions on whether we should make regulations, and if so, to what extent. We intend to conduct public hearings on these regulations in all the 9 provinces, and that will give us the opportunity also to raise public awareness on the regulator and its work. In terms of the law, we're supposed to table the regulations in Parliament before we finalize them. We hope that we'll submit them for tabling in Parliament in February. And our plan is that the regulations will be finalized in April 2018. That's the deadline that we have put for ourselves. And the regulations can be accessed on the email address that we have indicated on page 16. As you know, Honorable Chairperson, only certain sections of the Protection of Personal Information Act have come into operation, and those are sections 1, sections 34 to, I've forgotten, yes, some of the sections, my colleagues will remind me, but up to section 54, and those are sections that deal with the establishment of the regulator. Section 112 and 113 also have come into operation. And in terms of the Act, the remaining public and private bodies will be expected to be compliant with the Act within 1 year after the remaining sections have come into operation. We have set for ourselves the deadline of 2018 for the regulator to be fully functional. We have come up with an organogram which is at its zero draft, because it's the initial draft, which we are discussing with the Public Service and Administration and Public Service Commission and National Treasury, because the Act provides that the regulator will appoint its staff in consultation with the Minister of Finance. We began that process last year in December. We approached the Minister of Finance, and our scheme was that we'd request him to authorize us to appoint the chief executive officer, and then we thought that after that the chief executive officer would then assist us to come up with the remaining organogram. But we were then told that we can't do it that way, we must go to the Department of Public Service and Administration, because we have to benchmark our the salaries of our staff against the public service. We've been toing and froing a little bit on that, and then after a little bit of toing and growing, we then decided to approach the Public Service Commission to see if we can make progress, and they have now assisted to tell us what is it that we need to do. We have no office accommodation. The Department of Justice and Correctional Services has been kind enough to give us 4 offices on the 25th floor of Salu Building in Thabo Sehume and Francis Parkman Street. We share those offices among the 6 of us, because it's the 5 of us together with Mamoroke, who assists us with the secretariat, and another person who also assists us. So, but we're able to sit there until we're able to see which way we'll go, because we cannot have office accommodation until such time that the organizational structure has been approved. But we must also indicate and say that as of yesterday, we were given 2 other persons on secondment from the Department of Justice. One will assist us with the legal work, and the other will be acting as the chief executive officer. The budget, which is still with the Department of Justice, as we said, for 2016-2017, it was 10 million. We only spend 1.7, because as we say, we don't have any infrastructure, it's just us. And we try to do all the work ourselves, and to the best of our ability, we don't outsource anything. In the regulations, we drafted them ourselves. And for this financial year, we were allocated 25 million, which there is a possible underspend there, because we don't have accommodation, we don't pay rent, we don't pay salaries, because we don't have staff. An amount of 27 has been allocated for the next financial year, and these are the resources that I have spoken about. And what are the challenges that we have? The main challenge really is the slow pace of the establishment of the regulator. And the slow pace has a huge impact on the commencement of the remaining sections of the Act, until such time that we have the organizational structure, we have offices, we have systems in place and processes in place, we cannot approach the president for the operationalization of the remaining sections of the Act. The wheels in the public service move very slowly. When we came in, we were told that it will take 3 years for us to be established, and we said it's not going to happen under our watch. It will happen in 1 year. But it looks more and more likely that the 3 years will probably be a reality, the pace at which we move. So we're trying, we're pushing, and the work is piling. It's increasing at a phenomenal rate. But we are not complaining. We do the work, and we welcome the work. So there's potential underspending for this financial year, which could affect the budget allocation for the coming years, due to the fact that we have not been fully operationalized, and delays in the finalization of the organizational structure is another challenge. Limited human resources capacity and increased workload is another challenge. Ongoing, the mitigation, what are we doing to mitigate this risk? We meeting continuously with the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, Deputy Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, to assist us to unlock the bottlenecks. Even yesterday we had a meeting with the Minister of Justice just to appraise him of some of the bottlenecks that we asked him to unlock for us. We think the engagement with the Public Service Commission also to facilitate the process related to the organogram, also that we've seen a little bit of movement. And finally, we hope that our interaction with this committee will also assist us to move forward, because we hope that in exercising your oversight function over the executive, you'll also assist us to push to ensure that we are fully operationalized, because if we remain in limbo in the way that we are, there is a reputational risk, because public bodies and private bodies in particular are anxious for the operationalization of the act so that they can know what is it that they need to do to be fully compliant. That's our presentation, Chairperson, honorable members, and thank you very much for this opportunity.
Very exemplary presentation that does not go all over. Thank you very much. I think we can look forward to a very good performance by the Office of the Regulator. Any questions, and then we shouldn't expect them to be sangomas who can see into the future and deal with things that will arise in the future. Honorable Horn, Honorable Schwartz, Honorable Matthias.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Let me maybe start at the finish of the end of the presentation and ask maybe in more practical terms how Parliament and this Portfolio Committee could assist. Obviously, it must be of a worry to us to hear about this snail space, not referring to the Commissioner. no, the other commissioner. Chair, in all seriousness, while we were always aware that this was envisaged to be a staggered process, I think the one comment made by Commissioner Tlakula regarding the reputational risk must be a big worry to us all. In that regard, I also want to ask, in respect of the 150 complaints they refer to and the work piling up, how is the regulator at this stage able to effectively deal with complaints, if at all? And ultimately, also in their view, how could they be assisted to make their complaint dealing mechanisms more effective at this early stage already? That's the one aspect. Then also, Chair, in respect of the functionality or the sitting with the Department of Justice at the moment, when we were briefed by the Department of Justice at the beginning of this cycle, they informed us that according to them, there's a seamless relationship at this stage. If we could hear maybe from the regulator themselves whether they experience also on the part of, in terms of their relationship with the department, any frustrations and hiccups. We hear that the organogram is dealing with public service and administration, but with the department itself, also specifically referring to financial aspects, and we know there is no CFO yet. Is that hampering the effectiveness of the regulator at all, and what is the target at this stage, Chair, to finalize the organogram and then fill at least permanently the positions of the CEO and the CFO? I'll leave it at that at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. I've been largely covered, and just to, again, looking forward to this wonderful flower blossoming of the regulator, a pansy. I'm also just would like to find out whether there's any hindrances with the department when it comes to getting the regulator fully operational. I noticed that where you indicated 1.7 million of 10 million was spent, and that would largely be controlled by the Department of Justice. So we need to know if there's any problems in that relationship. And I'm very pleased to hear that you are going to expedite the establishment as quickly as possible so that the other chapters of the Act can be enacted. But we need to know, firstly, how we can assist you. And I think with this organogram, Chair, we might need to put pressure on as well, because the regulator has been in office now, I think, for 11 months since the end. Not yet, sorry. Was it February this year? Yeah. But anyway, no aspersion your side. I think it's from other people and other departments that are constraining you becoming fully established, and maybe we can help them, because this is a very, very important piece of legislation that needs to be enforced. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Schwartz, Honourable Matthias.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Well, I was listening attentively and I was looking at Advocate Ntuze. The first time I met with him was during the cyber crime and the cyber security bill public consultation. So I'm pleased that he's a little bit relaxed today and I'm able to extract some laughter from this as a broad smile. Well, look, Chair, I think the work of the regulator instrument has been over the very short period of time of its existence. Very commendable. They exude the sense of what they do, that they've got the understanding of what the mandate is, and they get towards the realization of the constitutional and legislative mandate. So there's really to be unfair to ask much from them at this point in time because they are putting their structures in place. I'm happy that they are able to demonstrate a broad consultation that they've had with various stakeholders, more so to introduce themselves and also to get a sense of what stakeholders in the sector are doing. In particularly, they have seized the ongoing litigation in relation to SASA and the recipients of social grants, and we hope that matter they are well seized with, and they will help SASA to meet the conditions put before it by the Crown Court. There's a specific concern which was raised by South African Human Rights Commission of non-compliance by state organs, government departments, particularly municipalities, in which they say that there's been non-compliance with the Bayer legislation. I would like to implore upon the regulator to help us to do an audit on all these organs, government departments, state organs, the private sector and all of that, to get a sense of whether there's compliance with PAIA and POPIA and whether there are structures in place to enable access of information by the public and ensure that there's compliance. But that can only be achieved through a thorough audit. So I'm making a plea with them that amongst many other things that they're doing, they should consider undertaking an audit. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, colleagues, and thank you, Chairperson of Information. Thank you. And other commissioners, media. Chairperson, let me follow, concur with my colleagues regarding the commendable way in which the information regulator has operated so far. Within few months, we already see commendable work. However, Chairperson, I'm very much concerned because I think they really need our intervention in this regard, in terms of especially in relation to organizational issues, the organogram and other related issues. Again, issue of accommodation, they are temporarily at Department of Justice, now engaging with Department of Public Works. So that also needs to be taken into consideration. another very serious concern is the underspending. Of course, as you have explained, because of accommodation, your House and Justice Department, and the issue of staff. So, because now we are only left with 5 months, really, I really sympathize with you, because it might have a very negative impact, as I said, come the 2018-19 and so forth. My concern, Chairperson, is that as this whole thing is unfolding, moving at a very snail pace, it really affects the public. Because even as I'm talking now, we receive calls from as far as United Kingdom wanting us to confirm our personal details. It really has a very, very negative impact. So I think our intervention in this regard is very much critical. However, generally, thank you so much for the way you are running the whole institution. Thanks, Chairperson.
Bongo.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Chairperson of the Regulator and other members. I think I should say this, that we are doing a great job. I don't think you must take it as at snail pace. What we've done for now, I think it's a good work. Actually, when I look back from the time we assembled this team, Chairperson, I'm beginning to be proud that we have put in a very, very strong team who can take this work forward. And I really, really appreciate from my side. I'm just worried about the... I think the task that we must just prioritize is the organizational structure, because that's where you'll be able to move from. Otherwise, you'll have those 150 cases and be unable to deal with them. I think the committee would, in the next appearance of the minister, just push that they prioritize this information regulator. As to the underspending, I think we are the only people who came here and speak about underspending. Everyone who comes in here wants more money and so on. So we've got to do something urgently around this matter, because in the MTEF, they will not prioritize you for the outer years because it's an underspending. So we've got to be forward-looking. Otherwise, you will come here the following year and cry foul about the lack of budget and so on. So I think we must move with the speed of a mirage in terms of ensuring that the next financial year you spend the whole money as it is given. Other than that, Chair, I think just to thank the team, we'll give whatever support. We're very proud that we have assembled this team and is working at this pace. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bongo, Honourable Majapo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to welcome the presentation of the information regulator, and to actually say welcome to everybody that has been appointed. Thank you for accepting the appointment, and we can see that the team is viable. We're just looking forward to you being in the position to deliver the mandate accordingly. Earlier, when the South African Human Rights Commission was here, they've indicated that they've met with you, but you haven't actually come with some form of an agreement as to how they're going to transfer PAIA to you. I didn't get an opportunity of making a follow-up question. I wanted to say to them, you need to have some time frames, you know, something that's just there in the air, and you talk about it, then you leave it. You may find that 2 years down the line, there will have been any form of transfer. So if you can actually have some time frames around this, it will really assist. I mean, in your organogram, I don't know whether it's costed. And I've heard some of the comments from the members about the organogram, but I think also what is important is to look at the organogram as to how it actually then responds to the mandate, so that there are no gaps in order for you to be in the position to roll out the mandate unhindered. You don't have offices now. For all the entities that come and report before us, what we always suggest is do not put too much money into leasing. See, for now you don't have problems with money because you're only trying to gain momentum. And when you go on full speed, you're going to find that you might even come to a situation where you think that the funds that you've got are not sufficient. But don't come to us when most of the money goes into leasing. Because what we're suggesting is that look at how to get government buildings to operate from so that you reduce on the leasing or rentals, because this has a tendency of actually consuming a lot of money of the entities that we are actually overseeing. Or you can look at a possibility of buying instead of leasing, and there's nothing you're going to benefit after a number of years. You can rather buy the building, and maybe you'll struggle now, but in the long run you find that you've got a building that you're actually not paying for. You'll only be paying for services. We appreciate the fact that you set systems in place. You can see you've got the audit committee, you've got the internal audit in place, even if you've assessed it, but it's okay. It's good to actually put the systems in place, because issues of compliance are very, very, very important. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think the honourable members wanted to leave this question to praise themselves for going to competent people. Honourable Murana, do you want to say something?
I wanted to say what you have just said. I wanted to say two members who are here. You have done a good job in appointing these people, and I wanted to encourage them to do better. I normally don't give praises. I usually reserve that. But I am happy that you're doing. But I also want to emphasize, Honorable Chair, that please take your work as very, very important. The nation relies on you and so many other things on this. And I trust you've got a lot of lawyers there. I only hope they've got two hands. Usually they say, lawyer on the one hand, and on the other. So I only hope they both have two hands. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, concluding remarks on your side.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for the feedback and the words of encouragement. The Portfolio Committee, I think you can assist us by ensuring that those that we depend on for establishment assist us. And that would be the Department of Public Service Administration, the Department of Public Works, and National Treasury. So that when they come here, maybe one of the standard questions that you can ask to them to say, how far have you gone in assisting the regulator to establish, because we depend on them to assist. The 150 complaints, I will give my colleagues to deal with that. The Department of Justice, they are assisting, but things don't move as fast as we'd like them to move. Maybe some of us come from situations where we were used to doing things very quickly. So things move not at the speed that would have wanted them to move, but I also have to say that where we find bottlenecks, the minister and the deputy minister are a phone call away. We are able to call and say, can you please assist with this, and they unlock those bottlenecks.
And let me also say that regarding the question on PAIA, and the members will take the other questions with your permission, Chair. I think on the PAIA functions and non-compliance, one of the issues that we thought we should do is that before we take over PAIA, we need to do evaluation to just understand what lies behind this non-compliance. Because we've been informed that lack of resources is a major issue, because people are given a function to perform, but they are not given resources to do that. So once we've done that evaluation, we'll then know how to move forward. Because this is not going, it's going to be now double. It's going to be compliance with PAIA and compliance with POPIA. And there's going to be consequences for non-performance and for non-compliance, unlike in the past. So we need to ensure that we go to the highest level to engage at even at treasury level to say we cannot give people a responsibility to perform and then don't give them what is the English word? That one. Yes, that's the one. You know, don't give them corresponding resources. I think we need to do that. So that's really what we're thinking of doing. But the rest of the questions, with your kind permission, I'll just give my members also so that they have an opportunity to respond quickly.
Thank you for maiden speeches, but you've raised the bar so high that please, 1 minute, 1 minute.
Honourable Chairperson, I will just shortly address the question relating to how effectively are we handling complaints. Just first of all, I should note it's very important that in the last 2 months, the complaints have doubled. So what this shows you is that the public out there is aware of POPIA, and members of the public are really proactive in complaining about the unlawful processing of personal information. So we have resource limitations, and of course the enabling section to effectively deal with a complaint, in other words investigations or an assessment, referral to the enforcement committee, those are not yet in operation. So we feel that it's not really conducive to write to a complainant to say, oh, the act's not yet in operation, thank you for your complaint. So what we do is we write to the complainant, explain that the act is not in operation yet, but that we strive towards proactive compliance. And then we write to the responsible party to say, we attach the complaint to say, of course, first of all, we see whether the complaint falls within our mandate and whether it's a valid complaint. Then we write to the responsible party and request a response. And up to now, the responses have been quite encouraging. Companies, responsible parties want to be compliant because they pride themselves on being proactively compliant. And if we see a trend, we will then follow up with an industry body. So up to this point, this is what we can do as far as complaints are concerned. So we've created a filing system process flow to ensure that we diarize and follow up. And it's encouraging that we now have the seconded legal head, which will, of course, help a lot.
It's a work in progress.
But this is as far as we can address the complaint.
Chair, thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. With regards to the organogram, the regulator really appreciates and takes the input of the members very serious that we need to prioritize the organogram. As our Chairperson have explained that we've got a zero draft, we also intend to benchmark internationally. We have also then, as the Honourable Member, Pumlan has referred to the other issues, we're also looking and focusing on how we can take the organogram and match it to our mandate. Our mandate is actually based on Section 40 of the Act, and based on Section 40 we've extracted all of those sections, and we've actually now start to match them to actually make the work of the regulator to match the mandate in such a way that we can enhance service delivery. And then lastly, Chairperson, what is also very important about organogram is that we are in the process of costing the organogram, and we will also be making sure that our costing model is based in such a way that our accommodation cost does not exceed a certain percentage, and we'll also take into account the very effective recommendations about the option of leasing versus the option of buying, and all of those options will definitely make sure that the costs are very low so that we can actually have more money to roll out in terms of making an impact with regards to service delivery and the public, and that will also then be tabled in our next annual report. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think you have spoken, presented a collective position, unless there's something that has to be said, otherwise the heavens are going to fall. You are well excused, and we must apologize for putting you under pressure. It's not how we operate. It's just that today we've had some challenges, and you are well excused. There's a matter of national interest, another matter of national interest that we have got to deal with before our first. Chair, good luck with your team. We're distributing a document on a matter referred to us by the speaker that we have got to